supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Not a fruit, it's a vegetable, the only vegetable we use, like a fruit. It's a weird plant, people love it, and we'll tell you how to take care of it, and how even Southerners can grow a little bit of rhubarb to brighten up their springtime. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Carl, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I am doing well today. Carl, how are you, sir?
Good, good.
And where is Carl good?
Chester County, PA.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Carl just outside of Philadelphia?
Well, I'm wondering if there's a PA bamboo law. I have a neighbor who planted some bamboo about 2 years ago, and it is rushing to my area so quick.
And
it has these runners that are probably 10 feet away from the plant, and they're coming to my asphalt.
Oh, yeah, they're not even close to getting started, Carl. This is just, they're just building up steam. This is one of the most aggressive, invasive, and destructive plants on the planet, running bamboo. There are other types of bamboo, clumping bamboo, that make great displays and are well-behaved, but running bamboo is not among them. Now, have you spoken to your neighbor about this issue?
No, I haven't. Nope, I knew she said she was going to put a fence up, and then I know I don't see a fence. I see bamboo, you know, starting to show up. And I was hoping it was going to be like a non-invasive type, and now this year I realize that it's not. And I've got these great rhododendrons that are probably 50 to 40 years old. You know, they're going to smother them out. They're going to kill them. So I'm really pretty
How far
upset.
Away are the rhododendrons from the nearest barbarian invader?
Right now, maybe 10 feet at the most.
Okay. Well, you got to get in front of those rhododendrons on your own, and you got to dig a trench, and you have to install what's called rhizome barrier. And this is, if you go to the website AmericanBamboo.org. It will talk about rhizome barrier. It'll show you examples. There may even be links to landscapers who are experienced in installing it. But once it gets mixed in with your rhododendrons, you stand a big chance of losing the rhododendrons, no matter how this works out dispute-wise. So, I think you should have opened up a discussion long ago, and I think time's a wasting for you to say, look, this plant is invading my property, it's going to do a lot of damage, I'm going to have to go to some expense right now to make a temporary barrier against it destroying my favorite plants. But you're going to have to remove this, you're going to have to be responsible for either paying for my barrier and making it all around my house, Or do something else. Are there other people around who are also going to be invaded?
No, I'm the only person.
Okay. Now, to directly answer your original question, about a year ago, the Supreme Court of Virginia ruled that the homeowner who planted the invasive plants was responsible for the damage these plants caused on other people's properties. I don't know if there is any case law in Pennsylvania yet, but a ruling from a Supreme Court of another state might be seen just straightforward as precedent. It's certainly something for whoever you would take the case to look at and look at the other person's lawyers and say, look, this guy's got a ruling in his favor, a very similar case. What do you got? You're clearly invading his property, you've crossed over the property line, you're causing damage, what are you going to do about it? But, I mean, the sooner you get through to her and the sooner she realizes this is a time to get a backhoe out there and rip this stuff up or pay for the installation of rhizome barrier. And I feel your pain about the rocks. When we fenced in our backyard, when we were a rescue home for Great Pyrenees, we got two prices. One was the price for the fencing itself and installing it, and the other was like a maximum price for any kind of rocks they would have to dynamite or drill through. And I looked at my wife and I said, just write him a check for that maximum price. And the poor guys at the end said, it's a good thing you're nice people. This was the hardest job we ever had. And that's going to make the removal harder. But, you know, time is a wasting. This is like something on your face. You don't know if you should talk to the doctor about it. You should. You
okay.
should. Time is of the essence. It's only going to get worse. If she won't deal with you, the very least you should do is get estimates on rhizome barrier, because this stuff can go 10 feet very quickly, man, and get it installed. And then take her to small claims court at the very least, or find a lawyer who will pursue it for you. But this is one of our biggest issues, that what I file under toxic neighbors, people who like spray their property with herbicides every day, or people who plant these things that come over and come into your living room and change the channel on your remote control.
Okay, I guess I have to go cross the barrier, go see her, and a little discussion.
Absolutely. That's, she may not know what she did, but it has to be worked out.
Okay. Well, thanks for the advice.
All right. Good luck, Carl. You face
All
a
right.
tough foe.
Love your show. Thanks.
Thank you. 1-888-346-9499. Debbie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello there.
Hello, Deb. How are you?
I am doing great.
And where is Deb great?
We are in Northeast Kansas.
Okay. What part? What are you near?
Hiawatha, Atchison.
All right.
I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
I know you don't like the wood mulch.
Right.
But a couple years ago, we had a horrible, we've had several things, but we had an ice storm and we had a windstorm. Lost a lot of locust tree limbs, had the tree guys come and they shredded them up. And I kept them. This is before I listened to you all the time. And then we put them through a chipper shredder. They've set for 2 years, and they're just nice, black, fluffy stuff. Can I use that?
Now, you piled this wood up for a couple of years. Does it look like wood, or does it look like soil?
No, it still looks like wood, but when we chipped it through our chipper shredder, now it looks like soil.
Okay. If it is completely decomposed, if when you pick it up, you feel no large particles, if it is like soil, then it has become soil and may be used as compost.
Okay.
If you look at it again and you realize you were exaggerating a little bit, just pile it up and let it sit for another year and it should be perfect.
Okay.
All right. What else?
Well, the other thing was we have grapes, Concord grapes.
Okay.
And every year I pruned them religiously. Well, we had a horrible winter here and I didn't get it done. And before, we never got very many grapes. You know, I did, like it said, through the extension office, everything, never had a tremendous amount of grapes. This year I didn't, and I've got grape, little baby grape bunches like you wouldn't believe.
How old are the vines?
Oh, probably 10 years at least.
Well, maybe you weren't getting the best pruning advice for your area. Obviously, you don't want to prune them now. But you realize now that you have this abundance, you're going to have to thin the fruits dramatically.
Okay.
You have to remove every other cluster of these baby grapes for the vine to have enough vigor to ripen up the grapes you have. You also have to remove grape leaves so that airflow and everything can get to these very disease-prone plants. But
okay.
I think that's why all these recipes involving grape leaves were discovered and became so popular in parts of the world where grapes were a staple, because they realized early on, if you strategically remove enough leaves to allow good airflow inside the plant, you cut your disease problems in half. And it turns out you can eat the grape leaves and use them as holders of food and stuff. So it's a lot of fun. Next winter, I would suggest you modify your pruning technique, obviously. Maybe meet somewhere in the middle.
Okay. And does rabbit fertilizer pellets make good fertilizer?
Yes, rabbit manure, which comes out kind of solid, right? It's like a pelletized fertilizer.
Yeah.
is a well-balanced fertilizer, very potent. You don't want to use too much of it. You don't want to use it on crops like grapes that don't like a lot of nutrition. What do you plan to use it on?
Well, just everything. I mean, I plan on letting it compost first and then use it on everything.
I think with rabbit pellets, because they are so pelletized, that you can mix some. If you have an existing compost pile that has a lot of shredded leaves in it, absolutely mix some of your rabbit manure in there. But I would also say you could spread small amounts around the base of plants that you want to feed, and then cover that with some soil or compost, just as if you were using a granular fertilizer.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Deb?
Well, thank you, and I really enjoy your program.
All right. Well,
very much, and I'd like to hear from other people around the country what they're doing.
I think that's one of my favorite parts of the show as well. Well, thank you for listening.
You have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind garlic growers to cut the scapes off their plants promptly. For snow and snap pea pickers to be out there every day to keep their plants productive. For lettuce and other salad green growers to begin providing some shade and extra water on hot days. And for bush and pole bean planters to inoculate their seeds to increase vigor and yield. But don't you go making that list and checking it twice just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the rhubarb on Rhubarb. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Supporting WHYY, Arden Theater Company presents Hans Christian Andersen's The Flea and the Professor, now on stage through June 12th. A young professor loses everything in the world but the flea who lives in his vest, and that turns out to be plenty. The flea and the professor become the best of friends as they run away with the circus, get shipwrecked on a desert island, and escape in a hot air balloon in this magical madcap musical adventure. Info on Target 2-for-1 dates and Arden Summer Camp for Kids at 215-922-1122 or ardentheater.org.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, presenting the new Lincoln MKT, a luxury crossover with three rows of seats, a refrigerated console, and an available dual headrest entertainment system. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, it's not just luxury, it's smarter than that.
See the WHYY studios transformed into a night garden on Thursday, June 16th. Join us for the Summer Night Soiree featuring a beer garden, wine and spirit sampling, and special guests. For more information, visit whyy.org/member experience. The WHYY forecast, partly sunny with a high around 82 degrees today. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and a low near 62. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high near 80 degrees. And Monday, partly sunny with a high near 82. It's 71 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 1119. This is WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it's the only vegetable we use like a fruit. We deliberately grow it as a food, even though the leaves are poisonous. And believe it or not, one of the biggest negatives about rhubarb is that people have trouble growing it down south and in the hot west. Well, we'll help all of you understand how to grow rhubarb just about anywhere. And yes, you hot climb growers, get ready for a tip that'll help you eat some rhubarb pie next springtime. In the meantime, though, lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Tracy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well today, Tracy. How are you?
I'm very well. Very excited to be chatting with you.
We'll take care of that pretty quickly. Where are you, Trace?
I'm in Wayne, Pennsylvania.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia. What can we do for Tracy and Wayne?
So I live in a townhome community, and the townhome I've discovered recently takes care of the lawn, and they mulch the soil, but the flower beds they really don't do anything with. So my responsibility to weed them and to, you know, plant if I want some stuff. And I have a really horrible outbreak of thistle.
Mm-hmm.
And I have pulled at the things, but they're, as I'm sure you know, really insidious. And you know, people tell me all these things I can do, but I'm not a fan of, you know, massive chemicals. I don't want to poison my soil.
Good.
But I also would love to understand, how can I do this with a reasonably modest effort, as opposed to, you know, constantly having to be out there pulling these things up.
What do you have planted that you want?
I basically am just starting fresh. So I spent all of the last Saturday pulling everything up. I mean, there's trees there, but there's really no flowers or shrubs or whatnot, and I want to plant new things. And so I'm starting from a clean slate.
Have you just moved in?
No, I moved in 4 years ago, but I was traveling a lot, and I kind of doing a lot of other things, and so I've just committed myself to it this year.
Right, but in the meantime, you've let the thistle become established.
Yeah,
and let's be honest, I mean, this is a huge issue. We've done a lot of questions of the week and phone calls on it. Anybody who joins a community with an HOA or management of the grounds, they often are stuck living in a very chemically intensive environment that they can't do anything about. You know, people move into these places, they don't seem to read the contracts, and, you know, all of a sudden some kid is spraying green liquid on the lawn every day, and they're flipping out, and, you know, it's the wrong time to figure that out.
And that's not the case here. They do the lawn, and they take care of the lawn, and the lawn is lovely, but all of these areas are my responsibility.
Okay. Well, that's not the worst thing in the world. Typically, if you were just starting out and it was full of thistle, I would tell you to go out, just cut it to the ground. Don't try to pull it. Just cut it to the ground completely, and then solarize the soil, which would involve leveling it, soaking it with water, and putting clear plastic over it for an entire season. That would cook the underground root until it was completely finished.
Mm.
Otherwise, your options are to hold back on your plantings, grow some stuff in containers this year, even containers on that soil, and just keep cutting it up once a week as soon as it emerges. There's a big underground root system there that you have to exhaust. Depending on the size and the location, you could have somebody come in with a very tiny backhoe and dig it up and try to get the roots out that way. Or you could cut the plants off at ground level, have somebody excavate the soil for you down to a depth of a couple of inches, and then lay down what's called rhizome barrier, which is sold to keep bamboo from spreading. You have a very heavy substance that prevents the rhizomes crossing over it. You would lay this down over top of the entire area, then you would refill that bed, kind of creating a sunken raised bed. You would refill that area with good soil, a mix of compost and soil-free mix, and then you could grow what you want over top of the thistle, which will eventually be smothered and killed. Of course, keeping an eye out for the random one that's finding its way around. But there's no easy answer. Thistle is a tough plant. You can spray this thing with herbicides, the deadliest herbicides known to man, all summer, and it'll probably weaken it quite a bit, but it wouldn't even kill it in 1 year. This is a very tough plant. This is right up there with bamboo in terms of a massive underground root structure that can store a lot of energy, and it's a survivor. It knows how to defeat these standard tactics.
That sounds great. So I think what I'm hearing is your recommendation is, before I go ahead and do anything, that I really need to address this, because otherwise, no matter what I do, they're just going to keep coming up.
Oh, they will. And if you plant your wanted perennials in there, then you're always going, you're defeating yourself, because now you don't have access anymore. Now you're worried about killing your wanted plants. You can grow anything you want this season. Grow it in containers. But spend the season destroying the thistle, and then in the fall, you can plant those containerized plants in your new bed, and you can then have the containers to refill with different plants and spread around the following year.
Thank you so much.
All right, Trace, good luck.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Bill, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. I'm in Bayboro, North Carolina. I'm sure you know where that is.
I have no idea, Bill. I know where North Carolina is.
Okay. It's not far from the Neuse River, but about 10 miles from the ocean.
Yeah, 10 miles isn't a bad day trip. Oh, right. No. I kind of got what part of how far east you can go before you have to start walking on water. What can we do for Bill in North Carolina?
All right, well, this winter, we had an exceptionally cold winter. And I had a nice tomato bed, raised bed, with about 12 plants in it. And it didn't really seem to get much yellowing of the leaves. I had pretty good tomatoes all year. So I pulled the plants out, and I put leaves in there and with coffee grounds. To use it as a compost pile. But it was so cold during the winter, I don't think it composted completely because looking at it this spring, I started raking it around and I found some orangish deposits, you know, within the leaves. And
right, you found some mold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
now,
I was just wondering if that was... not to be used.
Well, tell me, Bill, I'm a little confused here. You had a raised bed, I'm presuming, that you grew tomatoes in.
Right.
And then you pulled the tomatoes out, and you covered the bed with shredded fall leaves and then mixed in coffee grounds?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know that's not a compost pile unless somehow this bed got raised up another 4 or 5 feet.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, you actually seized defeat from the jaws of victory. Because
I've done that before.
Yeah, exactly. That's what men are for. We're here to make sure people have good stories to tell, Bill. Yeah, it is a great idea to shred up your fall leaves and make compost out of them. Or to use them simply to cover your garden beds to keep the nutrients in the soil and to prevent those late winter weeds like chickweed from getting established in your bed. Unfortunately, you did neither. The shredded leaves alone, especially if they were well shredded, that would have been a brilliant idea. And then what you could have done this spring is you could have just moved that leaf litter to the side, installed your plants where you wanted them, and kept the leaves there as a weed-preventing and moisture-conserving mulch. That's actually a great no-till method of gardening, especially if you had prepared your raised beds well. When you mix the coffee grounds in a pile, in a big pile that was 4 or 5 feet high, that would have created compost. But the difference in what you did is you didn't have the depth and the size to achieve internal combustion. So
right. Well, I noticed it wasn't getting any heat.
Right, because there wasn't. You need a center to create heat, and yours was kind of a brick walkway of a compost pile. It doesn't have enough height to achieve that warm center. But I'll tell you, I don't think these molds are anything harmful. They're probably just nuisance molds. What I think you should do is you should scrape all this stuff off the surface of your raised bed. How many beds did you do this in, or was it just one?
This is just one.
And do you have other shredded leaves, and do you have other ingredients?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a compost?
Yeah, I made a wire pen, and I've got that up about 3 feet now.
Excellent.
With a mixture of leaves and coffee grounds.
Okay. I want you to stop adding coffee grounds. I think we're probably a little overwhelmed because you're not adding more shredded leaves. I want you to take that material off of the bed. I want you to mix it in with that existing compost pile. And then I want you to turn that pile. I want you to mix all the ingredients up well. And where you are in North Carolina, mixing that up and getting everything moving should turn all those leaves and coffee grounds into really good compost within the next couple of weeks, and then you can
use it.
And next year, just cover your beds with shredded leaves and use the coffee grounds in your compost pile or something like that. But don't try to compost in a thin layer. That won't work.
Okay. All right.
But no harm done. I would use that bed this year.
Okay. Well, I actually moved. I made another bed.
Excellent. Well, you never have enough. You never have enough room to grow. And you know, Bill, to plant your tomatoes in a different spot every year.
Yeah, that's why I made another bed.
Excellent. Well, I think you're poised for success, sir.
All right. Well, I had good success last year. In fact, I had tomatoes till November.
Yeah, you're in North Carolina. That's not bragging. That's just reporting. All right, Bill. You take care, sir. Have a good season.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mark, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I am doing well, Mark. How are you, sir?
Doing fantastic.
And where is Mark fantastic?
I'm in Exton, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yep.
All right, what can we do for Mark in Exton?
Actually, I had two questions for you, Mike, but I'll ask the first one, and then you let me know if you have time for the second. But the first one was, I have a fig tree, and I got it. It was given to me in a pot. I planted it 2 years ago, so it's been in the ground 2 years. It's about 6 feet tall. Main trunk is about 3 inches in diameter. It's up against on the south side of the house. It was growing up against the house, so I wanted to pull it away from the house a little bit. So I was kind of planning digging up and moving it, but then I figured, well, maybe I could just kind of train it away from the house. So I have it pulling away from the house with wire attached to a stake that's pounded into the ground. I'm wondering if you can do damage to a tree by training it with wire this way. Because I really had to bend it pretty good away from the house to get it to kind of to get it on the angle that I'm looking to have it grow.
You're killing it.
I'm killing it.
Oh, yeah, sure. What's the wire wrapped around?
Well, I took some old cuttings. When I pruned it, I took some of those cuttings, and I made like a sheath out of those cuttings. And I kind of weaved them together with string, and so that's kind of wrapped around the trunk, and then the wire's wrapped around that. So there's no wire cutting into the tree.
You think.
But
You hope. You think and you hope.
No, there's definitely no wire cutting into the tree. I made sure of that.
Yeah. But this is something that even professionals have a hard time doing, Mark. They use really professional tools, or sometimes people have success with a rubber hose through which they run a rope. But when you say wire, it scares me. You know, that's like Orient Express. You don't like somebody, you come after them with some wire.
Well, let's say it's doing no harm. Is it the mere fact of bending it in this way doing harm? Could that do to the tree?
No. It's going to look weird. It's going to look awkward, and you're probably taking it out of its protected position, which it needs, because you're not in the city. You're outside the heat sink of the city, and so fig trees are only marginally hardy where you are. If it's been doing well, it's because it's so close to the house.
Okay.
Have you been wrapping it over the winter?
Yes.
And what have you been what have you been wrapping it with?
Well, I haven't actually even wrapped it. I staked it off with burlap. It's kind of blocked wind. I didn't wrap it. I learned my lesson 5 years ago when I killed the tree by making a column and filling it with leaves, and I took the darn thing.
All right. Well, I like pounding stakes into the ground and wrapping burlap around the stakes. That is the smart money. The only thing you can do better than that is make sure the little house you've built goes up to the top of the plant.
Yes.
So if you do that, you'll suffer the least winter damage. Right. Of course, I can't see your fig tree in bondage here. I just kind of Aquaman-like, I sense it calling out to me for help. So I would really like to release the tension on this poor plant. Let it go back. What are you worried about? Because it's so close to the house. You afraid you planted it in the right spot?
I'm not really worried about anything. It was more just aesthetically, I just would have liked a little bit further from the house. I mean, right now, it's still close. It's still about, you know, a foot away from the house. It was just really up, you know, it would have grown against the house. And I don't even know if that's a bad thing, but I just, aesthetically, I wanted to move it.
You're a fuss budget. You got spielkas. You need to sit on your hands. Don't you have enough to do, Mark?
All righty.
if you fear that it's somehow going to cause damage to the house after you unwrap the tree in the spring, feel free to prune some branches off the back end. But don't move it. Don't put it into a bondage pose again. Keep wrapping it right against the side of the house. You have your best shot at getting massive amounts of figs, man.
Yeah.
Don't seize defeat from the jaws of victory.
All right, Mark. Thanks, man.
All right, Mark. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind those gardeners who always plant too many food crops that local food banks welcome your donations of fresh produce when the season is coming on strong. And there's still time for the rest of you to plant that last bed or extra row with crops designated to help the hungry. But don't you go looking for all the donation sites near you at the online America's Second Harvest just yet. Because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to get the most rhubarb out of your rhubarb. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden. Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The theme will be Moonlight and Roses when the Morris Arboretum holds their annual fundraiser this Friday evening, June 10th. The Pottstown Area Garden Club will hold their annual garden tour, The Art of Gardening, next Saturday, June 11th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And there's a big farm fest at Maisie's Farm in Chester County on Saturday, June 11th and Sunday, the 12th. There'll be a garden party in Center City right here at WHYY when I host the big summer soiree at WHYY on Thursday evening, June 16th. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
You're listening to WHYY-FM. Do you know a teen interested in video production? WHYY is offering two hands-on experiences this summer, the Young Journalist Summer Camp for teen reporters and the WHYY Film Academy for young filmmakers. For more information, call 215-351-3318 or visit whyy.org/Hamilton Commons. The WHYY forecast, partly sunny with a high around 82 degrees today. This evening, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and a low near 62. It's 73 degrees in Horsham and 72 degrees in Center City at 11:39.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Rhubarb, how best to grow this crazy vegetable we use like a summertime fruit? And great news for southern gardeners who've never had any luck, I'll have a trick for you that'll let you grow rhubarb even in Arizona. You won't want to miss it, and you won't. You just got to listen to a couple more fascinating phone calls first at 1-888-346-9499. Pat, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. How are you today?
I'm fine.
And where is Pat Fine?
I'm from Newtown, PA.
What can we do for Pat in Newtown?
I'm a big fan of Honeycrisp apples, and so I decided to try to grow them myself. So last spring, I purchased 2 6-foot apple trees from a grower that was listed at a good source and planted one tree in front of the house and another one in the back. Well, the one in the front didn't make it, and I wasn't entirely surprised because of the weather at the time. But the one in the back was just fine, and it made it over the winter. And then this spring I was waiting for leaves to pop out, and they did, only they're only a foot above the ground. It looks more like an apple bush instead of an apple tree. And I'm wondering, should I cut the tree just above where the leaves have popped out and hope for the best, or is it a goner?
It does not sound good. What time of year did you plant these things?
I got the trees in late March of last year, and they were in the ground within 3 weeks.
Okay. You didn't plant them in the heat of the summer or anything like that. Were they bald and burlapped? Were they in pots?
They were bald and burlapped.
And you did remove all the wrappings?
I did.
And you dug a wide hole that wasn't too deep and put the tree into the hole?
They weren't real deep, but I did put some good soil in with the, within the hole before I put the root ball into the hole. And then I made sure I had water in the bottom of the hole, too.
In the bottom of the hole?
Well, in the bottom before I put the roots in.
Oh, that's bizarre. Was the plant dry?
Yes, it was pretty dry.
Okay. In the future, what you want to do when you get a plant like that, now this is easier to do with a bare root plant, but typically the soil around these root balls isn't worth very much to begin with. Especially when you get bare root plants, they tend to be dehydrated. So as you're starting to get ready, you put the plant into a bucket of water so that the roots are saturated for a couple of hours before planting. That gets the tree off to a good start. Hopefully the water you put in the bottom of the hole just drained away immediately.
Yes, it seemed to be draining as I was planting the tree.
Well, that's a good sign. That meant you had good drainage. And you say you did make the mistake, which is not a tragic mistake, of putting good soil in the hole as opposed to your native soil. Then tell us what you did.
And then I watered. I kept watering, and they looked like they were doing just fine, and I'm going to make it through the summer. And then I noticed in the fall that the one out front had died altogether.
You say you watered a lot. How exactly did you water?
I watered around the base of the tree in the morning, and then I guess it was usually in the morning, once in a while in the early evening.
And for how long would you water?
Oh, probably about 10 minutes.
Yeah. You didn't go and read our directions on how to plant a fruit tree or anything?
No.
Online. Yes, that's always a better thing to do before than after. Unfortunately, this was not a rainy time in our environment.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, they died from dehydration.
Oh.
Typically, when you put a new tree or shrub in the ground, especially one that looks a little drought-stressed to begin with, you do all the things you did, but then you get a garden hose, and you fiddle with the nozzle until it just comes out as like a steady drip, but no more than a drip, and you drop it down at the base of the plant, and you leave that sucker on for like 24 hours. Then you back off a little bit, and if it doesn't rain, you do like an hour every other day. And you typically can see when the plant then gets established. Lack of heavy-duty watering in the beginning is as big a cause of plant death induced by humans as overwatering for established plants. And it is typically the way young trees are knocked out early. Do you know anything about the caring of apples?
This is my first try of growing apples.
Fruit trees are a lot of work, and it's a learning curve. This is a 6-foot tree that's only 1 foot alive.
Well, that's what I think.
Yeah, I would probably eat it. I would probably just start over again. Go online. Go to You Bet Your Garden. Go to Garden Answers A to Z and read Fruit Trees 101 and Tree Planting 101. And I think that would hold your hand through the replanting. Now, I do warn you that if you start over again, apple trees and peach trees are not low care. They need to be protected from insects and disease. They need to be pruned. They need to be thinned. But, of course, the rewards are amazing. Even a peach tree that doesn't do well in a certain season in my house is going to produce like 40 pounds of peaches.
Oh, my goodness.
So it sounds like you made a very common mistake of inadequate watering in the beginning. But I don't want you to feel bad about it. Experienced gardeners kill a lot of plants before they then become some of the best gardeners on the planet.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Pat. I hope you try again.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Rachel, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. I'm Rachel from Elkins Park, Pennsylvania.
Nice to hear from you, Rach. What can we do for you?
We listen to your show a lot, so my husband trusts you very much. We have a pin oak it's a mature pin oak. I think it's taller than our three-story house. And I think it's half alive, and my husband thinks it's half dead. So,
well, you're both right.
We're not quite sure what to do. He wants to chop it down, and my crazy neighbor also wants to chop it down. So we're trying not to chop the tree down.
Well,
I am, anyway.
Well, Rach, does any part of the tree overhang your neighbor's property?
The branches themselves don't overhang. It's just a very tall tree, and my husband's concerned that, like, one of the branches might, or if the tree falls down, it could go into my back neighbor's property.
The danger is of falling branches. When a tree has dead limbs high up, they must be removed. Otherwise, they're going to crack somebody's skull sooner or later when they come down.
Right. But does the whole tree have to come down?
Well, that depends. Is this like the old Batman villain Two-Face, where one side is completely healthy and the other side is all disfigured? Where's the death and where's the life?
It's intermingled, I think. There's some dead branches at the very top, and that's the ones that my husband thinks, you know, is indicative of the tree being dead.
Well, it depends on the tree. Some trees can reestablish new central leaders. I'm no expert on pin oaks, but I will tell you that the dead branches at the top are a physical danger to humans.
Okay.
So what I'm going to suggest is you contact a couple of certified arborists, have somebody come out, have them look at the tree, and two things. What's it going to cost you to have somebody go up there and remove all the dead wood, or is this tree rapidly failing and it's probably better to start the timing of its removal, which is going to be expensive. You know, trees near houses are very expensive to take down, especially if you do the right thing and have the stump completely pulled out of the ground and hauled away.
Right. I know. That's where my neighbor is coming in, because he wants to do it for us for cheap, but he wants to take the wood. But he'll climb up into the tree.
Yeah, but what's he going to do with the stump in the ground?
Nothing.
I think you need an independent arborist to come out. They're either going to say, here is my price for going up and cutting out the dead wood, or it's my considered opinion that this tree is going to continue to progressively slide away. But the immediate answer right now is, whether it's your neighbor or somebody else, they should go up into the tree and remove the dead wood. That is step number one. An arborist is going to charge you a lot to do this. If this guy has the equipment and he knows how to do it safely, then, you know, that would be your choice. It would even be worth you to pay him a little something to selectively take out the dead branches, leave all the green growth behind, and tell him, then let's see what happens over the next year if this improves the health of the tree. Or if more branches die, then maybe you can begin to discuss him taking down the tree and you leaving the stump in the ground and turning it into an outdoor table, or putting containers full of plants or something like that on top of it.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. You can grow rhubarb just about anywhere. Bob in Springfield, Ohio, starts us off. Mike, we love rhubarb, but many years ago, our huge patch died, and we were told there was a disease in the soil. Since then, I've tried many times to start new crowns in other spots. The roots go in a deep, rich hole, and the shoots come up beautiful, but the leaves start to go brown and brittle when they're about 5 inches high. Soon, the plant withers and dies, but amazingly comes back the next spring. Can you help? I'm dreaming of rhubarb pie and jelly. Well, I've always been fascinated by the oddities of rhubarb, the only vegetable we use like a fruit, and the only garden crop whose leaves are toxic, but whose stalks are safe to eat. Safe to eat, that is, unless you're highly sensitive to oxalates, as there are low levels of these crystalline-like structures in the stalks as well. Oxalate-sensitive individuals must also avoid spinach and some other foods. Now, we devoted a lot of ink to rhubarb back during my time as editor-in-chief of Organic Gardening magazine, and here's a condensation and compilation of our best growing advice. Rhubarb can be planted spring or fall. Unless you're sharing somebody else's root divisions, the plant will arrive in the form of a crown with eye-like shoots on top. Dig a deep hole about the size of a bushel basket, and then mostly fill that hole back up with nothing but rich organic matter. We're talking compost, well-aged manure. You can add some sand or some soil-free mix if your soil is very heavy. Then place the crown in the center of this richness so that the buds are a few inches below the soil line. Cover it over with more of that rich manure and compost, and then mulch over top of that with some compost, some more manure, shredded leaves, or straw. Rhubarb grows best in climates with lots of rain and has what's known as a chilling requirement. It needs a certain number of nights in the 40s and below to produce well. In naturally cold climates, plant rhubarb where it's going to get full sun. But if you're trying to stretch it into doing well and being a perennial crop in the south or down west, make sure it gets afternoon shade and lots of water. Now, although good drainage is essential, rhubarb requires a lot of water. New plantings must be kept moist if rain is scarce, and even established plants need to be watered at least an inch a week any time it doesn't rain during the growing season. Most sources say not to harvest any stalks the first year and to only harvest lightly the second year. Otherwise, the crown will peter out prematurely. When harvesting, try and twist the stalks away from the plant rather than cut them off. And of course, when you harvest, remove and discard every tiny bit of those poisonous leaves. To produce their best, rhubarb plants will need to be dug up and divided every 5 years or so, ideally in the very early spring before the new growth begins. Now, as to our questioner, most sources also agree that rhubarb suffers few to no pest or disease problems. So my diagnostic guesses for this failure to rhubarb in Ohio are poorly draining soil, lack of watering attention during dry times, lack of adequate sun, and or not enough food. That last one is important. Rhubarb is a very heavy feeder that wants to be top-dressed with lots of compost and aged manure every single season. And it's no surprise that those, quote, dead plants came back in Ohio. Although you can stress it, rhubarb is hard to kill in cold climes. And it just likes to grow. Real enthusiasts have learned how to harvest a patch all summer long, not just in spring, by providing shade in hot times, lots of food and water, and harvesting those stalks promptly. We move on to rhubarb wannabeers. Delma in coastal North Carolina writes, "Do you think I'm too far south for rhubarb to do well? My, quote, USDA zone is supposed to be 7, but sometimes I see it listed as an 8. I must be just on the line." And the Reverend Tom from the St. Paul Lutheran Church in Crawford, Texas writes, "Can rhubarb be grown here in central Texas? We're about 20 miles west of Waco. We are transplants from South Dakota, and we really miss fresh rhubarb." Well, the farther south you get, the more rhubarb needs afternoon shade and lots of water. The varieties known as cherry and cherry red are said to have the best chance of perennializing in the south. But in really hot climates, rhubarb must be grown as an annual crop, planted fresh every year. Hot weather rhubarb fiends start their seeds indoors, just like tomatoes in August, transplant the starts outside at 8 weeks of age into fertile, well-drained soil, and harvest stalks December through April, after which the poor plants are just going to burn up in the summer heat. We move on to Tony, just outside Philadelphia, who writes, "My rhubarb, 2 years old and growing beautifully, has just developed what look like flowers forming on top. Should I cut them off to let all the energy go into the fruit stalks?" Yes, Tony, flowers draw needed energy from the crown and should be removed promptly. They're also not very pretty, and any seeds they would produce probably would not grow usable rhubarb. And finally, a contribution from Mark in London, who writes, "Mike, I love your show and thought you might like this short video on growing rhubarb indoors here in the UK." Well, thank you, Mark. The video you sent is wonderful. And from the looks of it, using this technique, folks just about anywhere could grow rhubarb all season long. We'll post a link to the video that Mark sent with this question of the week. Well, that sure was a big rhubarb over rhubarb, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in depth, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to feed me rhubarb leaves if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time, but you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Put the actual subject in the subject line and check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems. Hint, hint, take a hint, just like yours, hint, hint. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineers this week have been Kevin Griffin and Al Banks. Our webmasters are Rich the Lionhearted Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our intern, Jessica Mandick, is out picking rhubarb. Our bright and shiny new volunteer is Heather McLean. We also had assistance from the mysterious Elizabeth. Already sweet without the need for added cups of sugar, Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. There isn't enough sugar in all the world to sweeten up our editor, Al Banks. I'm sometimes edible, sometimes toxic, Mike McGrath. And as long as you remember not to nibble on my leaves, I'll see you next week. Do the rabbits that ravage our plants really dig deep burrows? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the type of fencing required to keep Peter Cottontail out of the carrots. Plus your fabulous phone calls.